Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Lee Hutchison.
And welcome to Filibuster.
So glad to have you back, Matt. I'm not surprised it's taken a Marvel movie to get you back in the hot seat, but here you are.
You know I would come back for Marvel, but it's really good to be back, and I've missed talking to you, League, and I've missed talking to the rest of the Nerd Partiers, and I've missed our listeners. I'm glad that the show has been going so well, but I am back, at least for the time being, and with good news that I've survived my first year of law school mostly intact.
And no, and we're glad to have you back as well. It's never the same without you and your infectious attitude towards cinema, and in particular Marvel. So it really is the perfect getting you back episode, I think.
Well, yeah, but I have to say that, you know, school has taken a toll on some of my Marvelous fandom, because, I mean, like, there's been two movies released. Where obviously we're going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 today, but, like, back when in November when Doctor Strange was released, I only saw that once in the movie theater.
And especially considering you saw, like, the Captain America movies about 100 times.
10, I think 10 is my record for Civil War.
Yeah, I mean, I know even I've been the same. Like, life just gets so busy lately that before I would maybe go, I'll maybe catch that one again or something like that. I mean, I've struggled to see Guardians of the Galaxy twice, so I'm still stuck on my first show, and so I'm hoping to see it again at some point, and I'm hoping you'll convince me to make that a trip sooner rather than later.
I hope so, too, because, I mean, I saw it. So I saw this the day it came out. I didn't go to the Thursday night showing because I had a final the next day. So there's another example of school getting in the way. But right after the exam was over around noon, me and a few law school friends went to catch like the early afternoon IMAX showing of Guardians. And we all had a lot of fun. And I really enjoyed it. And then I saw it again 2 days ago on Saturday night.
Saturday night at the movies, indeed, then.
Yeah.
Like, I saw my first showing. I went to, as always, the midnight session. We got the first Guardians of the Galaxy, like 9:30. Then we got, like, a 30-minute break, and then we were straight in at midnight to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So, with all the ad breaks and everything in between, it was about 3 a.m. before I got home into bed, and thank God I had a flexi morning, that's for sure.
Well, I could tell, like, because, like, I know some of my law school friends probably haven't been to the movies in a while because some of them were flabbergasted at the amount of trailers and previews, and I'm like, yeah, it's the first big movie of the summer. Of course there's going to be all the trailers and previews here.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes those are just as exciting as anything else, aren't they, when you get to see the trailers on the big screen and on the IMAX.
Speaking of which, by the way, let's just talk real briefly, because this is the first time we've talked since January. I love seeing that Thor Ragnarok trailer on the big screen.
Oh, yes.
With the audio. God, that looks good.
I know. I got to see it not once, but twice that night, and it was so cool as well. I will remind everyone, until the movie comes out, I said this will be the best Marvel movie long before a single frame has come out. And I think we did a poll on the Nerd Party Twitter page of, like, what superhero movie people were most excited for. So you've got Wonder Woman finally coming to the big screen. You've got the Justice League movie with some of the biggest superheroes ever. And you've got a new Spider-Man. And Thor, which has been a franchise that was just kind of been a bit maligned, was coming up top with being people's most excited movie of the summer. So hopefully my theory on how amazing Thor Ragnarok is going to be doesn't go unfounded.
Well, because it was an amazing trailer. Like, I didn't expect to like it that much. And then I saw it, and then I think I hit repeat about 15 times that day.
Yeah, it's just so cool. It wasn't a surprise for me to see how well that movie played and the approach they kind of took. The last podcast we did, I raved nonstop about Taiki Waititi, and he's nailed it as far as I'm concerned. And so hopefully the next the other 111 minutes worth of footage matches up.
And I'll say that having seen Guardians now twice, both with packed audiences, that trailer really goes down well.
Yeah, it's definitely a crowd pleaser. I mean, we got kind of the quite an array of trailers. We got some DC trailers, we got kind of some of the big action movies coming up as well, and the Thor trailer was the one that went down so well, whereas you could hear kind of snoring in the audience when the Justice League trailer came on. So yeah, it definitely seems that maybe if Thor is kind of kicking it out of the park like that just at the trailer stage, I hope it's not a case of a trailer kind of leading us on to quality, but fingers crossed.
I've looked up his Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb. He's yet to make a bad movie.
Exactly. Like, yeah, as I say to everyone, please watch What We Do in the Shadows, Hunt for the Wilder People, and you will be sold. Like, you know, based on his previous movies and what the kind of the subject matters and everything like that, like with the way they were going with Thor, Ragnarok, like I always knew it would be kind of nailed. So I'm really hoping, really, really hoping it's going to be the best, because like this is one of my most anticipated movies of the year. It's up there with Edgar Wright's new movie and such like. So fingers crossed.
But yeah, I honestly think that like that trailer is so good. This has the potential to be the Winter Soldier of the Thor franchise. And I don't mean it'll be as serious as Winter Soldier, but it'll do what Winter Soldier did for Captain America, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Because like even though like Captain America, the first movie was like, you know, it's good. And I think it's actually a fantastic movie. Like it wasn't one that blew away the audiences. And no, Thor movies haven't really kind of done that so far. And this one feels like it's going to do that breakout.
Right, and even when the first Avengers came out, I mean, people would love that movie, but, you know, I heard a bunch of, like, oh, Captain America's lame jokes, and then all those stop after Winter Soldier, so...
Yeah, that's for sure. Like, yeah, Captain America's reigning supreme just now, so fingers crossed the Norse god himself can join the gallant captain.
I think so, too, and I'm looking forward to all the character dynamics. But speaking of character dynamics, we're going to talk today about Marvel's newest release and huge success so far, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. First, Guardians of the Galaxy came out in 2014 and was a huge surprise to everyone. People thought for sure it was going to be Marvel's first bomb, and it ended up making almost $800 million worldwide.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was one of those movies, like, from that first kind of iconic trailer when it first came out to kind of everyone's responses to it. Really was a movie that kind of, you know, broke out of nowhere, and it was really kind of Marvel kind of going into the universe and kind of breaking out of what we were sort of used to so far with Marvel movies. So it really was like a total palate cleanser at the time, and that soundtrack is still probably one of the most played playlists on Spotify and everything in between.
So, you know, with the huge success of Guardians, and that, you know, a lot of people count that as their favorite Marvel movie, the pressure was on for James Gunn to come back with something just as cool and just as amazing with Volume 2, which, you know, it's a pretty tall order to make a sequel that's better to a surprise original. I mean, I still like Age of Ultron, but I wouldn't venture to say that that was better than Avengers 1. So, I mean, I don't know, Lee, what were you feeling going into this film?
Yeah, I was somewhat muted going in. I think it was more the fact that kind of like I've been getting into the stage where I'm kind of trying to switch off watching movie trailers for movies I'm like I know I'm guaranteed to see and I'm excited for. Like, unless I see it on the big screen, I'm not interested in watching the trailers. And for some reason, I kind of was watching the trailers and they just didn't sort of just like press my button in a way. Like, I was excited for them, but I never looked at the trailer and thought, oh, I'm really excited for this. And I think it was the fact, you know, I was probably more excited for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, but a new James Gunn movie was always something for me to celebrate. So I had my ticket weeks in advance for the midnight screening. And I was kind of lukewarm going in, but that wasn't such a bad thing. It was kind of me kind of tempering expectations and just kind of trying to play it cool. What about yourself?
Yeah, so, I mean, I was excited. I'm always excited when a new Marvel movie comes out. You know me very well by now. But I will say that, like, I really enjoyed the first Guardians, and I saw it more than a few times in theaters. But I liked the setup of the characters, and, but the story was fairly, you know, generic, and it was a bit of a fun romp, but with some emotion there, but it was really just, I don't want to say surface level, because I don't want to, like, denigrate that first film. It's still really good. But it's a lot of surface level pleasures, and so I didn't know what to expect from this film, but I wanted it to at least tell me more about the characters, because I liked the characters in the first one, but again, I feel like they were mostly superficial traits that we were learning about them, minus, you know, some things like Peter Quill's past and a few other things. But I wanted something that made me like them more.
Yeah, because I think it's easy with sequels like this, especially something like Guardians of the Galaxy, where it was such an unexpected kind of breakout hit, where it's easy to play the same cards over again and go, okay, like, everyone loves this about Groot, let's do that. Or everyone loves this about Drax, let's do that again. It's easy to play on those same stereotypes, those same character traits and types, and, you know, kind of go down the same music route. You know, it's easy to play on all those things that just unexpectedly worked so well for the audience last time.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll get into to volume two itself, but what I will say off the bat is I think that wherever this movie ranks for you in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think James Gunn is a very smart man, because I've seen him interview, I've seen him talk, and I think what I like most about this movie, and we can start getting into the nitty-gritty, but what I like most is that he didn't try to go bigger. You know what I mean? Like, the story is considerably smaller and maybe less of a plot through line than the first one, but what I like about it is that James Gunn gave me exactly what I wanted, which was more background and more reason to care about these characters. Because my first thoughts coming out of the movie the first time was, I really enjoyed the first Guardians, and I liked the characters there, but this one really made me fall in love with the characters. Like, I feel like I know them now.
Yeah. I mean, like with you were saying, like, it's hard. I still think kind of the first Guardians is almost like sort of the perfect setup in a way that it is one of those things that you can want more, but I think in a way it works just so well, knowing what we do, that we really only get to know these characters for what, like a couple of days, and that's only so much time to really kind of milk them all. And I think with this we certainly do learn a lot more about the characters, and I think that was one of the particularly most enjoyable parts, was getting to sort of, instead of perhaps making the universe bigger, which it does to an extent, we get to see a bit more. The scope and scale of this movie, like, kind of increases in quite a few ways. You know, we see more ships, we have a god, but it really is the kind of the character work that is the biggest kind of expansion in the story, as opposed to kind of the visual aspect.
See, yeah. What I like about this movie is that, again, I brought up Age of Ultron earlier. I still like that movie a lot, but I feel like in that film, Joss Whedon, is as brilliant as he is, bit off a lot more than he could chew by trying to make it bigger but also more personal. And I feel like it's really, really hard to walk that fine line of bigger but more smaller and focused inward. I feel like kind of the Russos were able to do that with Civil War, in the sense that I think that the global threat isn't as big as it was in Winter Soldier. You still have bigger spectacle than Winter Soldier, but the threat itself was very much personal. And that's what I feel like Gunn was able to do with Volume 2.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think you come out of it, and I think the best kind of you could say of it is that one of the kind of, the, you know, we talk about scale and the character growth, is the biggest one we really see is Yondu.
Surprised with Yondu.
Yeah, and I like that he became really, like, it wasn't so much these kind of, it's easy to expand the cast outwards, and it certainly does that, but it kind of takes, it looks at something that was such a success in that first one, and it was like Michael Rooker as Yondu, and went, like, we've got something really amazing here. And, like, yeah, you're watching at the beginning thinking, oh yeah, he's been kind of cast out, and he's kind of a bit bitter, and that was something I never kind of got, because at first when I was watching the movie, because I was thinking, well, he shouldn't really be kind of angry at Peter Quill for kind of doing him over, because there's a bit where you see him at the end of Guardians and he opens the little orb and it's the troll and he kind of smiles and laughs. Like, it's not an issue that he's been played in a way. And then I was watching the movie going, oh, but I thought he was kind of happy at the end of the other movie. And obviously, he ultimately does care. He's been a surrogate, really, for Peter his whole time. And I thought that was really well played. And the fact that they took his storyline and they made it something that was one of the maybe the best characters in the Marvel Universe so far in a movie, I think, yeah, he knocked out of the park.
Yeah, he was great. And obviously, guys, we're going to be talking spoilers because, you know, it's been a few weeks out. We've had our grace period. But I will say that Lee and I both really enjoyed the movie, I think, is what I'm hearing. So if you haven't seen it yet, go see it and then come back to us.
And if you haven't seen it, why have you not seen it?
Well, you know, people have lives and people are busy. But I will say that it's definitely worth taking out in the theater. So come back to us when you have seen it, because we're going to be talking spoilers. So you mentioned Yondu, and yeah, he's a character that I thought was funny during the first one, and I loved his little whistle arrow. But I did, you know, again, we don't know much about him other than the fact that he's the leader of these Ravagers, which are basically mercenaries and pirates, right? So in this one, when we pick up with him, I like the fact that what you said was true, in the sense that he seemed like he was amused at the end of the first one, but I like where it ended up going, in the sense that I imagine, like, his crew, after his crew got done laughing at him, they're like, oh yeah, so we're gonna go kill Quill, right, because he totally double-crossed us. And the fact that he didn't is starting to cause some problems between him and his crew and him and the other Ravagers.
Yeah, like I really like that the kind of we got to see more of the Ravagers in action and kind of get a real insight into their culture in a way. And I thought that was, like, definitely one of the best parts, was that kind of, yeah, the expansion of the Ravagers, and not just kind of have them perhaps as the cannon fodder that they were in the first one, but now that they're kind of a fully fledged kind of entity in the Marvel Universe, similar to almost the Guardians in a way. We know them as well as we know the team now.
Yeah, including Sylvester Stallone, by the way.
Yeah, that wasn't... Like, I remembered he was in the movie, or like, he'd been cast, but, like, I'd kind of... It slipped my mind by the time Opening Night came out, and I watched it, and I was like, oh, yeah, brilliant, cool, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, and I thought he was good for what he was there for, so...
Like, yeah, exactly. I'm sure he earned more than we did in a year for his brief turn.
Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing him back in Volume 3.
I think it's nailed on that he's going to be back in Volume 3. That you don't just kind of tease him not to go further.
Yeah, but Yondu's story was really interesting, and then of course his whole arc is the fact that, you know, he never really told Peter that he considered him family, but I mean, he goes to the point of making the ultimate sacrifice at the end, and that's something that, I mean, you rarely see in Marvel movies, because they like to save their characters for future installments. But no, I think, you know, I was listening to James Gunn give his, he did a spoiler Facebook chat today.
Oh, yeah. And I think he's done a spoiler podcast with Empire Magazine as well, when it could have really come to us. But that's okay. We're not bitter, James.
No, we're not bitter at all. But, I mean, I think he confirmed in that thing that, yeah, he's really dead. And that's almost why he was reluctant to say yes immediately to Guardians 3, is because he's always worked with Michael Rooker in each of his films, and he didn't know if it felt right to continue without him.
He's probably going to get a flashback or something. When he died, I was like, yeah, he's definitely dead, but I know that he's going to find some way to get Michael Rooker back in that film. I refuse to believe he won't have be in some small capacity.
I mean, but I think so too. But I mean, we got to the end and like, oh, they're disintegrating the body. Oh, he's dead.
Oh, and, yeah. And Marvel could not get away with doing another cop-out death. Like, he's definitely 100% dead. But knowing James Gunn, he'll be in there for 1 second or 2 seconds somewhere. Like, he'll be maybe like some sort of maybe a little flashback, or they'll have him as some sort of alien in the background. He will get a Michael Rooker in there somewhere, and that'll be probably one of the ultimate Easter egg hunts.
I mean, Guardians is kind of a riff, or at least the first one was kind of a riff on that kind of Star Wars space fantasy, so who knows, maybe Yondu will show up as a Force ghost.
Or this, they'll maybe do a search for Spock, that they'll go find this magical planet to where they can bring Yondu back to life.
Yeah, but I mean, they'll have to grow a new one because they disintegrated the body.
Exactly. I'm sure. I look forward to it. I think it will be the ultimate Easter egg in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 to find Michael Rooker. I'm ready for that challenge.
Yeah, I am too. But I was very impressed with the way they handled it. Like, it was extremely emotional, very well earned, and it was a nice arc for the character. But, you know, we start off the movie, and we're picking up with the Guardians about 3 months after the first one. And kind of what I liked about the whole opening, aside from the fact that it was cute with Groot and the other Guardians fighting the space squid in the background, was that I like seeing them, like, they had just met each other in the first film, and they did one mission together, where they were kind of reluctantly put there. Now I like seeing them 3 months later, like, they have their own dynamic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where to the point where, like, you know, before the squid shows up, Rocket is trying to get the stereo system together because Peter likes to listen to music while they fight. And it's, you know, they have all this in character, in-universe banter between themselves.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those ones, like, it feels earned as well. And yeah, like, I like that, especially at the beginning, that it's a great way to get off. Like, it's one of the classics that, you know, the best bit of comedy. Like, yeah, you have this big fight and you just you play around the fight and stuff like that. You see these horrific things that the mind can't even imagine, and it's just, you see, just following that one character, and just things are happening on the periphery. I really like that. It was such a strong start.
Well, and what I like about it too is that I think that's James Gunn telling us that, you know, we come to Marvel movies and we see a lot of spectacle and we see a lot of battling and we see this, that, and the other thing, but this is him, like, using the camera and using his focus to say that, yeah, you're going to get some good action in this, but that's not the focus. Our focus is the characters.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what it always should be, and I think they definitely managed to do that in this movie, that all the action scenes are infused with, like, the characters and the character, like, every action beat is an opportunity to get to know the characters better, for the characters to shine. It's not just, like, a lot of space movies could it be where it's just like, here's some space spectacle and the characters are just there to further the CGI plot, whereas the CGI action is there to complement, you know, the characters. And I really like that a lot. You know, it's, if they can tell a joke or they can do some sort of visual humor or comedy with the action scenes, that's the option they always take, as opposed to here's some CGI, you know, brilliance for the sake of being able to do it.
Right. What I like about each of the action scenes in this is that it's spurned by a character being themselves, in a sense. Because after they fight and defeat this space squid, you know, they go to meet the Sovereign, who... my theater got a big kick out of the fact that their spaceships are controlled by, like, 80s action arcade games.
Yeah, it's the sound effects, too. It's like, it very much reminded me of Scott Pilgrim, in a way.
Yeah. No, it was just a nice touch, but so, you know, but because Rocket is a little stinker in this, he steals some of the batteries that they were supposed to be protecting, which spawns the whole action sequence with the Sovereign fleet chasing them down. And like I said, with each respective action thing that kicks it off, it's because a character is making a personal choice,
mm-hmm.
which I like.
Yeah, and I think Rocket certainly, like, gets quite a lot of growth as well in this movie.
I really like Rocket. I mean, he might be one of my favorite Guardians after this film.
Yeah, I'd say so. Like, at the beginning, you're almost frustrated with him in the way that Quill is, when you're like, man, why the hell did you have to steal the batteries? Or could you not have just kept your mouth shut for 1 minute? But it's always one of those things, like, he isn't us. He isn't the sensible one. He's always got to pick that kind of option. So it's very true to the character, and you certainly share in Peter's frustration with his actions in the beginning, for sure, anyway.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, when you think back to the first one, he was a mercenary bounty hunter. Like, this is not his field of expertise of being a hero. So it makes sense, and You know which other character I was really impressed with that, you know, is hails from your brethren, Lee, and that was Karen Gillan as Nebula.
Yes, most certainly. I mean, actually, I feel like most of the Avengers team hail from my region, as I've kind of put up here and there on things like Twitter. Like, the Avengers Infinity War has been filming in Scotland just now.
Yeah, I know. I'm super jealous.
Oh, I've had friends bump into Chris Hemsworth and Mark Ruffalo. And
by the way, I loved that little video of Elizabeth Olsen trying to master Scottish slang.
Exactly. And even things bizarrely, like one of my friends highlighted that Sean Gunn, who from Guardians of the Galaxy,
yeah, he does the stand-in for Rocket.
Yeah, and obviously one of the Ravager as well. He was kicking around one of the student nightclubs here in Edinburgh. Like, I feel like, yeah, like they've left now, but I'm gutted I never bumped into any of them while I was waiting for like my fish and chips or waiting for a bus. So yeah, they've been here and they've certainly left an impact, and I'm sure they'll all pick up a bit of a Scottish twang by the time they finish Infinity Wars.
But back to what I was saying, I feel like Karen Gillan and Nebula got a lot of growth this movie, because she's in the first one and she kind of just has the role of kick-ass henchman. We really don't know that much about her except that she's Gamora's quote-unquote sister who also was enslaved by Thanos. But here we get to find out a lot more about her background and why she's so bitter.
Yeah, and I really like it that it's something that it's just simple, of like that thing of like always having to be competitive. And you know, when you watch the first Guardians, you automatically sign with Gamora over Nebula quite naturally. With this, you kind of feel a lot of sympathy for Nebula, and you think, oh, Gamora, you're like, yeah, like, could you not have just let her win one time? And you think how must have horrific it must have been.
Plus, like,
all the injuries she had to go through, all that surgery, just because she couldn't win one of the fights.
And again, here's the thing, is like, I can't wait to see Thanos in Infinity War, but I would say he's arguably at his scariest in this movie, and he's not even in it. Because, yeah. I mean, you hear what he did to Nebula every time she lost, is that he ripped out parts of her body and replaced it with machinery. That's horrific. That's the most scary thing he's ever done so far.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Like, I'm still not blown away by the character of Nebula, but I really thought the growth of her role as well was excellent.
I mean,
stuff.
I don't
and
know
another
if I,
fine choice.
I don't know if I would say I was blown away. I was very impressed with what they did with Nebula, and now I can say, okay, that this character is more than just the evil henchman. I would like to see more of her now.
Yeah, and I think we'll certainly see more of them. You know, the characters that we get more of in this movie, you certainly feel that they're going to be kind of valuable additions for the third and probably final volume of the Guardians adventure.
Yeah, but someone who likely is not going to be in the third adventure but was a big part of this one, obviously, is Kurt Russell.
Yes, most definitely. What did you think of Kurt Russell?
I love Kurt Russell. I mean, not just in this film, I just like him in general. He's one of those people that, you know, shows up to a movie and instantly makes it better for me. Even if it's not a good movie, he still makes it better for me. And here he's in his full 80s. Like, if you saw any Kurt Russell film in the 80s, this is what he acted like.
Yeah, and I mean, I was blown away in the beginning when you see the first thing. You're like, oh my god, that's like Kurt Russell from The Thing quality. It's so good.
You know, it's really, what the movie that came to mind was, have you ever seen Big Trouble in Little China?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's what he was playing to me in this one. In fact, whenever I was expecting, he has a line in this where Peter is describing what Yondu did to him, and he said he was threatening to eat him, and Kurt Russell goes, oh, that son of a bitch. I was expecting him to go, that son of a bitch must pay, which is...
Yeah, I'm sure there's an alternative cut out there with that.
But you know what? I ended up really liking Kurt Russell, and I will say that, you know, Marvel has always had its issues with its audience in terms of villains, but every time I think they've made a successful villain, and I'm going to count Kurt Russell among them, it's because they're personally connected to one of the main characters.
Mm-hmm.
So you had that with, you know, sort of Bucky when he was the Winter Soldier connected to Cap. You had, I still count Daniel Bruhl from Civil War as a successful villain.
Yeah.
Because
I certainly flew the flag for how great he was. Like, yeah, 100%.
But here, I mean, like, I think Kurt Russell is one of the better Marvel villains, because it turns out that, you know, he did go, he is Peter's father, he did impregnate his mother, and, you know, supposedly he did care about him, but, and I kind of like the fact that the clue is in his name. It's all ego. It's he's totally self-centered to the point where, like, he wants to consume everything in the universe so that the universe could just be him. And really, some of the best acting I've seen from Russell and from Chris Pratt, who I think is awesome, as always. But one of the best moments is when the big revelation that it was Kurt Russell who put the tumor in his mother's head that killed her.
Yeah, like, I think I felt, I saw that one coming, and when it came, it was like, oof. Like, it was just the way he delivers it. He's so nonchalant about it. And it was just one of those ones you were like, as soon as he said it, you're like, man, I just want to see this guy get his ass kicked.
And, but the way that, like, Pratt, I mean, people can take Pratt, like, not as a serious actor, and usually Peter's pretty goofy, but when he has to do some of the serious stuff in this film, he does really well.
Yeah. I think, yeah, it's continuing to see, like, even in kind of Guardians of the Galaxy 1, that, yeah, like, it's pretty much all kind of humor or kind of a variation of that. Like, we're now seeing a more kind of, you know, rounded Peter Quill, and we're seeing that kind of, you know, I mean, I'm so, you know, blessed that my mom's still alive and everything like that, but I couldn't imagine being in that sort of situation and having gone through that, and imagine being able to take out all that anger, all that frustration of how much it hurt to lose your mom, and having a physical face, someone that you can take out on, you know, over, say, a brain tumor. There's nothing you can do, there's no fight you can have with that. With this, you can punch that guy and know it feels good in a way.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. But, like, it also felt really tragic, too, because, I mean, this should be a happy thing for him to meet his father after all these years. And it was, you know, even though it doesn't further the plot any, there's that nice little scene where Ego teaches him how to make the energy with his hands, and then they end up playing catch, which is something that he always wanted to do with his dad. I mean, like, it like, very, very simple things, but it was very sweet. I liked that.
Yeah, and especially if you've been missing a father figure, it's easy to kind of fall on the stereotype of things like, oh, I wish I got to play catch with my dad. It's the same in sibling relationships. You always think, oh man, I wish I had a girlfriend. I'd love to be able to just go out for a burger and shake. It's not nothing big. It's nothing grand. It's just something that's kind of that's go-to sources of entertainment and fun.
Right. So, some people are comparing this movie to, if the first one they compared to the original Star Wars, they compare this one kind of more to Empire, not in the sense that it's darker, but in the sense that the Guardians are, a lot of them are split up for most of this movie. And I liked some of the character pairings that they went with. You know, I didn't think, because it's not something you would think of right away, but I didn't think that Rocket and Yondu would work as well as they did, but they really did. I think I had most fun when I was with them.
Yeah, I thought they were great. I mean, that was one thing that slightly frustrated me about the movie, was, like, I wanted, especially like the first one, I wanted them all to be together all the time, and what's that kind of dynamic and bouncing off each other, but kind of obviously with the story being as broad as it is, I would have liked to have seen to see them a bit more together. Like, it feels like we were with them together in the beginning, and then we're kind of apart for a lot of the movie. They're kind of spread out, and I do miss seeing them bounce off each other. I would have loved to have seen more of them together, but I'm sure that'll be appeased in Infinity War when they're back together,
and volume three.
Yeah.
See, but I think the reason that they're split apart is because it's the theme of this movie. I think the theme of this movie is all about family and what really is family. And what they learn by the end of it is that blood doesn't make you family. It's the family that you choose.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a story type that's as old as time itself. But when it's done this well, you're quite happy to retread that kind of old ground, as it were.
Yeah, so I think I agree with you. I would have liked to see them more together as well. But I feel like they made the right story decisions for the right reasons. And, you know, it was probably good splitting them apart because, you know, we got to find out more about them individually, which I don't know that you could do if they're all together in the same scene all the time.
Yeah, like, you wouldn't have been able to get the Gamora, Nebula stuff, the brilliant scenes between Rocket and
Yondu. Because they tried to do that with Ultron, with our Avengers. And, I mean, I don't think it was as tight as this, because you had to, basically the way you learned about their background was through the Scarlet Witch visions, which were basically just hitting the pause button on the story. Here I felt like we were learning about the characters as the story kept moving.
Yeah, exactly, and it wasn't just so much that they were pushing forward the plot, but like, yeah, we got to learn so much about kind of what it's like to, you know, for Yondu to be a dad, for Rocket to be a son in a way, and then for Peter to be what it's like for him to be a son, and then what it's like to be sisters, that we're kind of really getting a lot of the family dynamic, and who can forget Baby Groot as well. So we're like, we really get all kind of parts of what it's like to be a daughter, a sister, a father, a son, and you know, kind of a stepdad as well. So we really are getting kind of every bit of the family dynamic, not just that, what's it like to be a dad and a son, as we're all kind of accustomed to.
Right, and you mentioned something there that I definitely want to hit on too. Baby Groot. How easy would it have been, since that was such a popular thing from the end of the last film, how easy would it have been for James Gunn to shove Baby Groot into each scene and have him do something adorable? But no, like, I really like the fact that he has his scenes, that he has his bits, but he does, like, he's not jam packed into every scene to do something cute. He's not Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, it could easily have been done, and it was a bit of a fear I thought going in. But no, I loved Baby Groot, and yeah, it wasn't my favorite character in the film by any stretch, but like, I enjoyed every little moment he was on the screen, and that CGI on his like face, the nuance.
He's so adorable.
It was brilliant. Yeah. I think I want a Baby Groot.
But I mean, yeah, he's not my favorite character, but like the way they used him, he picked and chose his moments. I think like his most extended bit is him trying to find the fin for Yondu.
Yeah, it's so good, isn't it? Just like, and obviously the part that was somewhat, we knew coming from the trailer, of like struggling with the buttons and which button to go for, and obviously Mr. Blue, he certainly got a lot of crowd pleasing moments.
Well, yeah, but you know, being a baby, he doesn't get to fight that much during this, but I like the fact that they gave him the responsibility of the detonator, and that he was able to figure it out. That was his contribution to the final act.
He got to blow up a planet. Yeah, I think that almost certainly make up for his lack of fighting skills.
Yeah, but people like to say that the third act is your typical Marvel fare, and in a way that it is, but I think what makes it special for me is that it is so personal. You know, the final confrontation between Peter and Ego is done so well, and it's dramatic and yet funny. They manage to balance both tones to the point where, you know, you want to see Peter win, but you also don't mind seeing him win by making a thing of Pac-Man to eat Ego.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many crowd-pleasing moments, definitely, in that. And, for me, the part of the movie I was a bit bored with, personally, was the kind of that climax. It just became a bit of too much CGI going against each other, but it looked good, and I enjoyed the character work that was going on. But, like, I kind of switched off a bit, maybe the fact that it was about 2:30 in the morning by that stage.
Yeah, I would say see it again, because, I mean, it's not that you're wrong, there is a lot of CGI, but what makes it different for me personally, and it was kind of the way that first Avengers End Battle was, is that Gunn was able to inject personality into the end battle. So you have things like that moment in the trailer that actually is much funnier in the real film, but the moment where Rocket is talking to Peter and he's like, shut up and get me some tape. And so, like, what you don't see in the trailer is that Peter, you hear him flying around asking each person individually if they have tape.
Yeah, there's some really good comedy moments of that. But, like, I think what sort of, like, kind of redeems it kind of for me, I definitely do need to see it again. I was probably a bit too tired by that point in the movie. Was, like, I did love that the ending of it. The movie went out on that kind of the note of Yondu's death, like his sacrifice. Just that it was so intimate, that kind of ending.
Yeah, can we say that it's really cool that James Gunn let this go out on kind of a melancholy, bittersweet note?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the music complemented it well, and you know, the acting, and it was a very emotional scene. And like, yeah, like who would have thought, like the big emotional moment of like this movie would have come from, sort of like kind of a bit part player in a way from the first movie. Like, yeah, that's such a credit to Michael Rooker, Mary Poppins himself, James Gunn.
Can I just say that's probably my favorite line of the whole thing? And Mary Poppins, y'all. Iconic.
I think based on Michael Rooker's Instagram page the past few weeks, he's certainly embraced it. And the scene with him, I mean, he even gets the best scene when he's alive as well, just him taking out the entire mutineers. And yeah, like, he, as far as I'm concerned, if Groot was the star of the show in the first one, it's Yondu in the second one.
For sure. For sure. But the things that I liked as well, like, we have to talk about this because it's in every Marvel movie, but I got a good chuckle out of the Stan Lee cameo.
It was a very good one, wasn't it?
And I like the fact that he's just there, and apparently, like, Kevin Feige is trying to push this, like, little narrative that he's the same person from every Marvel movie, and so you have him sitting on this asteroid talking to three other aliens, and he's like, so this one time I was a Federal Express guy, referring to his appearance at the end of Civil War. And I just, you know, I love little meta things like that.
Oh, exactly. I mean, it's bonkers, and the fact that they can still make people chuckle with the cameos is never a bad thing.
I mean, I don't know what audiences are, you know, audiences are a little bit more stoic in Europe than they are here, but whenever Stan Lee comes on, you inevitably have a bunch of people pointing at the screen, and it's like, there he is.
Yeah, as if no one knows by now who it is. Like, you can imagine someone nudging going, there's Stan Lee, and it's like, shut up, Dave, I know that's Stan Lee.
No, but you know what I mean? It's like you know what Hitchcock used to do, is like, we're all there, we're having fun, but we're all looking for the cameo.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and you forget, you kind of relax into the movie and think, oh yeah, we're gonna get it at some point, but you kind of forget it's gonna happen, and then when it happens, you're like, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
And it's just, there are so many little things that I love, even really silly things, you know. I think one of my biggest laughs the first time, and this shows you how easily entertained I am, is when Rocket, Groot, Yondu, and Sean Gunn's character escape from the Ravager ship, and Rocket accidentally sets them on a course that requires them to make 700 jumps.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious. I don't know why, but...
It certainly separates itself from kind of the style of what's like based on Earth and stuff, and yeah, a bit kind of similar in vein to kind of Doctor Strange, but there's obviously that crossover between those two universes. And I mean, we have to mention before we wrap up the soundtrack. What was your thoughts? This is probably as anticipated as the film, like the soundtrack in itself. What did you make of it?
Again, unexpected, because I mean, I thought that the first soundtrack was, you know, a lot of crowd pleasers. It kind of reflected the movie itself. And what I liked about this one is that there's just some of these songs that I've never heard before. They're deeper cuts, and that's because this is a deeper cut film. And so I like the fact that they kind of paired along with that. I mean, I had
never... You have to think about the state of mind his mom was in at the time when she probably put this one together. She's on death's door. She's probably more reflective and less of a kind of summer groove that the first soundtrack had.
Right.
She's more melancholy, and that's reflected in the choice.
But, like, you know, one of my favorites from this film is, like, I'm a huge Fleetwood Mac fan, but I had never heard that song before this film.
Oh, man, that's my favorite Fleetwood Mac song.
So, whenever I go to a bar now that has the jukebox, I put on The Chain because of this film.
The only disappointment I have with the use of Fleetwood Mac is that they, they're using it again in the big battle at the end, like, that they don't use the kind of crescendo of the song and stuff.
Oh, you mean
like
the guitar riff?
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was nailed on top of it, but no, I'm only minor criticism.
But I really like this. The soundtrack was not what I expected, but it was still fun and it fit the film.
Oh yeah, I'm very curious to see where they go with Volume 3. Like, I always thought, like, how are they going to do a Volume 3? Maybe it's going to be like the second side of the tape. And then when they got one of the old retro MP3 players, I thought,
a Zune. I
cannot wait. I bet those are going for big money now on eBay. I cannot wait to see what they do with Volume 3.
Well, also too, like, someone was like, I was saying, like, okay, well, you know, obviously Volume 2 was Peter's mom's last gift before she passed away. And, you know, what is Gunn going to do for Volume 3 then if he doesn't have, like, another cassette tape? And someone on Twitter interacted with me, and they were like, hey, maybe he stops and picks up some of the music of today when he goes to visit Earth in Infinity War.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be something similar to that. So, yeah, I love the choice that it's an old-school MP3 player. I mean, I can't wait to see. I'm already more excited about the third volume soundtrack than the movie. So, and that's no diss on the movie. I just love James Gunn's mixtapes.
I do too. He's got great musical taste, and that kind of brings us, you know, to the end of our discussion. But I'll say this as far as my final thoughts on this film go, I really ended up loving this film, and for me, because of the character work and because of me now loving the Guardians, because I feel like I know them after this film, this might be my preferred movie of the two. Now, I know that's not going to be a popular choice among everybody, but like I said, something that makes me care about characters that I merely liked before and now I love, that's a big feat for me. And like, now I literally cannot wait for them to meet the Avengers.
Yeah, most definitely. Like, for me, like, I need to see it again to have settle on my proper feeling for it. Like, you know, I obviously saw it, like, half asleep, as it were. Yeah, but I still really enjoyed it. And I think the feeling me and my friends came out with Guardians 2 is that we really enjoyed it. But when you watch it just, like, side by side with the first one, the first one is such a great and almost perfect kind of superhero romp that's sometimes hard to kind of, you know, kind of that change of gear, you almost think, oh, it's just maybe not as good as that first one. So I think now that I've maybe had a few weeks, I just need to just get down on my butt onto the cinema again, give it another rewatch, and I think I'll have a more settled opinion. I mean, just now it's like a 3.5 out of 5 for me, but that could easily go up, or maybe it'll just kind of waver a little bit. But I think I'm going to enjoy it more on a repeat viewing. I think that's for sure.
See, and for me, the first Guardians was like a solid 3.5 to maybe 4 for me, but Guardians 2 is definitely a 4.
Yeah, I definitely can share your excitement, and I hopefully I'm even more excited after I see it the second time. And
I think so too. Once you see it in a vacuum, and once you like, because that's the thing, that this is usually why I see movies twice before I review them. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the first time I'm just trying to take in everything. I'm trying to take in the story, I'm trying to take in the characters, and I miss a whole lot of stuff. So I go back and see it again, and I look for, like, okay, now that I know what the story is, let me look for the little things. And I really think it's the little things in this movie that make it work best. So I'm curious to see what it would be like for you when you see it again.
Definitely, and that's going to be on the agenda hopefully in the next week or two. I'm off next Monday, so hopefully I've got the time to sit down and watch Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yeah, but it was great talking about this movie with you, Lee. I'm so happy that my first time back was talking about a Marvel movie, and
oh yeah,
we'll probably have
Spider-Man on the horizon too. Like, we've got to definitely cram in a few podcasts.
I think we're gonna have to do a Spider-Man one. Who knows, maybe next, you know, when we next get together, we'll have to do an Alien one, because I'm going to go see that on Friday.
I need to speak about Alien Covenant really badly, so I think we should, if you're free next Monday to record, let's get it in the books. I need to talk about it ASAP.
Yeah, I think that'll be good. I'm going to go see it probably Thursday night. If not Thursday night, then definitely Friday. So
sounds good. Well, we'll get this one in the books for you guys, and hopefully we'll have an Alien Covenant podcast for you sooner rather than later.
But yeah, Alien Covenant, I definitely think we should do one for Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yep.
It's going to be
Drivers on my agenda, you know, the new Edgar Wright movie. I've got it.
I'm kind of interested in that. Like, it looked kind of cool. Offbeat, but quirky.
It might give Guardians of the Galaxy 2 soundtrack a run for its money.
Perhaps. You know what movie I actually, like, I know it's probably going to be generic as all hell, but it just made me laugh my ass off, was, have you seen the Red Band trailer yet for The Hitman's Bodyguard with Samuel L. Jackson and Ryan Reynolds?
No, I've not yet, but I am, with those two guys together, count me in.
Oh, I'm going to send this to you. Like I said, it's exactly what you would expect from that kind of pairing in an R-rated movie. Mm-hmm. But God, is it funny. Like, and for me, it's just like, this is my fan fiction. Like, if Nick Fury met Deadpool, this is what it would be.
Cool. Well, it sounds like we've got an exciting summer of movies again, and hopefully we can get our diaries together a bit more often over the summer and, you know, podcast about what could be an exciting summer of movies for us both.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we should also try to get together with Tristan too when
most definitely
when War for the Planet of the Apes comes out, because that was our
that
was our very first podcast. Me and Tristan was talking about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes, so. And only 2 months to go today until it's out. So yep, we've got so much to look forward to over the summer. So Matt, if people wanted to rave about Guardians of the Galaxy 2 with you, where can people find you?
So people can find me on Twitter at mhansen0207. H-A-N-S-E-N, talking about all things nerdy, Star Trek, Star Wars, Marvel, Guardians, whatever you want, I'm there.
Absolutely.
What about you, Lee?
You can find me on Twitter at Lee_Nostromo. So the summer's off to a good start. You know, we've got Wonder Woman on the horizon, and then Baby Driver, and then Spider-Man, and War of the Planet Apes. We've got a hell of a summer
Dunkirk.
Ahead. Dunkirk, yeah. So the nerd party is going to be the place to be this summer, I think.
Yeah, for sure. So we are really looking forward to spending the summer with you guys. I'm so happy to be back. And until next time, I'm Mary Poppins, y'all.
Join the revolution. Join the nerd party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.